Chapter 2 Shropshire. Victor and Anna got married 6 weeks later, and I've never seen a lovelier bride. I saw Anna a lot during the last weeks of their engagement, and although Victor never realized it, I came to love her as much as he did. It was not her natural charm or her beauty that attracted me to her, but a special inner radiance. I looked forward to visiting them in Shropshire, and one day being godfather to their first child. I had to go away on business soon after the wedding, and didn't see them for several months. So when I received an invitation from Victor to join them for the Christmas holiday, I accepted happily. The couple gave me a great welcome, and I could see that their marriage was a success. Victor had adapted himself to Anna's quieter personality. She had an inner quietness that influenced the whole house. I remember the wonderful peace of the evenings when we sat around the fire in the large sitting room. I noticed that the house was much emptier than before. All the ornaments and a lot of the furniture inherited from previous generations had disappeared. The big rooms were now almost empty, except for the guest room in which I was staying. "This is a strange change for a woman to make," I thought to myself. "A bride usually wants to buy new curtains and carpets, and to bring a feminine touch into a man's house." One day, as I walked down the long passage leading to the stairs, I noticed that Anna's bedroom door was open. In the past, it had been Victor's mother's room, and I remembered the elegant bed she had, as well as several pieces of heavy furniture. Curiosity made me look in as I passed the room now. It was almost empty of furniture. There were no curtains or carpet, and the wooden floorboards were simple. It was like a nun's room. I thought it was very strange. I made a comment about this to Victor. "Oh yes," he said. "We've cleared out a lot of things. It was Anna's idea. She doesn't believe in possessions, you know. We didn't sell anything. We just gave it all away." Later that evening, we all sat round the fire, and Victor started talking about mountains again. "You won't believe it," he said, turning to me. "Anna knows as much about mountain climbing as us. I realized that when we went up Mount Snowdon together. I never told you that Anna finally agreed to come climbing with me, did I?" he added. "No," I said, surprised. "I thought she was against mountain climbing." "Well," he said, "that's what I thought too. But she was ahead of me all the time, and then I lost her." He continued talking, giving me every detail of the climb, which seemed to have been very dangerous, because they had gone rather late in the year. "The weather was fine when we started out," he told me. "But it changed mid-afternoon. There was thunder and lightning, and finally a blizzard. It became completely dark during the descent, and we were forced to spend a night in the open. The thing I'll never understand," he added, "is how I came to miss her. One moment she was by my side, and the next she was gone. I spent 3 terrible hours, I can tell you that." Anna didn't say a word while he was telling the story. I looked at her. Her eyes had gone strangely blank, without expression, as if she had closed herself up. But Victor didn't notice and went on talking. "Luckily, in the end, everything was all right," he said with a smile. "At about 5 o'clock in the morning, she came out of the mist like a spirit from another world, and she wasn't even wet. She said she had taken shelter under a large rock. It was a miracle she didn't fall and hurt herself. I told her that next time we go climbing, she mustn't do that again. Perhaps there won't be a next time, I said, looking at Anna. Wasn't once enough? Not at all, Victor said cheerfully. We've decided to go next summer. We don't know where yet, but we are going.